Good evening, all you ghouls and goblins, and welcome to Epic Tales in the Dark. Not all stories have happy endings, and tonight we're going to read you a handful of such tales. So turn off the lights, get comfortable, it's time to get creepy.
Alright, hey all you ghouls and goblins, we've got a brand new podcast for you, Epic Tales of Darkness, because remember, not all stories have a happy ending. With me is our very first guest, Mr. Patsy, the Angry Nerd.
Hello, everyone out there in Radio Land. I hope everyone's well, staying safe, wearing their mask, washing their hands, you know, socially distancing, which is easy because people are awful, so it's easy to stay away from them.
Yeah, I find wearing the plague doctor's mask, people tend to stay at least 6 feet away from me. I'll be your host, Baron Diceman. So we're going to just dive right into this. Patsy here has written a book, which I was lucky enough to finally get my hands on a copy. How much do you tip an exorcist? The cover art's pretty cool, but we can't show you that here because, you know, there's no video on Anchor. But Patsy, why don't you tell us what the inspiration for the book was?
Well, this is something that was many, many years in the works. Like some of these stories that are in there, because it's a different type of collection. It's some two-sentence stories, some horror haikus, and then a couple of lists, and 10 short stories. Some of these short stories were originally conceptualized around 2012, 2013, so it's been a long time in the works. The two-sentence stories and the horror haikus actually started with my amazing illustrator and very good friend, Jeanette Andromeda. She had been working on her website, Horror Made, and she was looking for some new content, and I was like, oh, I have these horror haikus. And she was like, oh, well, I do illustrations, because she's a phenomenal artist. If you've ever seen my show logo for Throwdown Thursday or any of the art associated with it, she has done all of the logos and all the work. Baron Diceman is currently wearing the T-shirt with her artwork upon it.
Oh, yeah, that's where that came from. I was like, I fell in love with the shirt when I saw it. I was like, I've got to get it. If there's any podcast network shirt I'm going to get, it's definitely going to be this one.
Yeah, she does phenomenal work, and she's gotten so much better, too. Like, she was already very talented when we first started doing this, and all of her art was designed specifically for, you know, to be showcased on her website and on Twitter and Instagram. Because we were doing Horror Haikus Day, where I would write the haiku and she would illustrate it. But her art was so incredible, I had to really step up my game when it came to writing, because I had to come up with something that was going to be worthy of the art that she created. And
And if you guys, can get your hands on a copy of this, which I highly recommend that you do, getting ghost voices on my end. I'm not sure where that's coming. Hopefully it's not being picked up in the recording.
Oh, if we're getting some EVP, that'll really help sell the book. This is, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it in Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Oxeye Media, which is part of Source Point Press, who actually published the book. Source Point normally does comics and graphic novels, but they do have a prose section, and I was lucky enough to meet one of their writers, Ben Goldsmith, at a horror convention last year, Scaricon, and we became friends. We had him on Throwdown Thursday to talk about his work, and he was like, hey, you know, because we were talking about writing, and I was like, yeah, you know, I've written a couple of things. He's like, oh, well, we're looking for, you know, stuff for our prose section. I can introduce you to somebody, and the gentleman he introduced me to was Josh Werner. And me not knowing how to pitch a book, I had printed everything out on 8.5 by 11 paper and just gave him this ream of paper and just like, here you go. And he's like, you know, obviously that was the wrong way to go about it, but he was like, you know, no, tell me a little bit about it. I'm like, well, it's called How Much Do You Tip an Exorcist? And he's like, oh my God, I can sell this on that title alone. Like, everyone I've told this title to was like, oh man, that's such a great title. And occasionally I come up with something pretty good when it comes to, you know, attracting people's attention. And I think How Much Do You Tip an Exorcist does that.
Well, I tell you what, there's a very handsome devil here on page 30, and I had talked to Ashes the other day when I first got it. I said, I can't help but feel like these people look familiar, and I guess on page 30 that's supposed to be you.
Yes.
Yeah. And I guess 17 has the lovely Ashes with that daylight.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm really getting the vibes here that these are supposed to be you guys. But what sold me was the itemized receipt when I first opened the book, and I was like, oh, please tell me that's the table of contents. Like,
For folks who don't have the book, there's actually a bunch of Easter eggs hidden in that invoice. So the invoice I actually was, you know, I'd given to Josh again, because I don't know how to pitch a book. I'd given to Josh. I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm thinking as my cover. He's like, really? Cause that's terrible. I'm like, so I'm thinking something else could be the cover. He's like, yeah, this wouldn't be a good cover. So,
cause that's what you want to hear.
Well, you know, he works with, you know, tons of artists and has access to, you know, people who can create covers. So having this, like, this isn't going to catch anybody's eye. It's just an itemized invoice. But if you look at the bill.
Oh yeah. It's
go ahead.
Yeah, it's nice once you get in there and look at it. But yeah, if I saw this on a shelf, I would probably just keep on cruising being like, oh, that's funny. You know, and I put it back, but it's like, no, the cover is definitely an eye catcher, the hot pink on the black.
Yes, and she did that specifically because it's the color of my beard and the color of my wife's hair. She tried to match it exactly. But if you look at the invoice, there's a lot of references to The Exorcist, the 1973 film.
Okay.
And, like, you know, the names that are on it. And I actually found what the address was for the house in that movie, and then I found what the tax rate was for that area. And so I went backwards working from that so that the subtotal for the exorcism comes to $615.24 at a sales tax of 8.25% would bring you to $666. So
that's clever. I totally overlooked it. That's
pretty much everyone has.
That's the kind of thing that, oh my gosh.
Like, if you if you look at it, like, the invoice date is 12/26 and the invoice is number 1973. The Exorcist dropped 12/26/1973. You know, so there's some fun stuff in there. I had a good time making that.
I don't regret the way I went about approaching this book, because I kept myself willfully blind to any spoilers, reviews, anything, because I wanted to go into this with a clean palate. I wanted to get the full experience of it, and it was just a matter of waiting till I could get my grubby little mitts on a copy.
Yeah, it's
it's definitely gone on my it's in my bestsellers list. I mean, sellers list, like, you know, not basement sellers.
Yeah. Well, if you know, if folks who do have it, you know, enjoy it, or even if you don't, they'd leave an honest review on Amazon. So far, there are 5, and everyone seems to really enjoy it. One of the stories in here has been submitted for consideration for a Stoker Award, which I'm very excited, and I'm thinking that's the story I'm going to read tonight, because we hadn't decided on anything, but. I think that's the one, since that just happened within the last 24 hours. I'm very excited for that.
Well, that is just downright epic. Yeah, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but I definitely started judging this book right at page 1. Hobo Stew.
Yes.
One of my favorite meals growing up as a poor kid was hobo stew. Making it as an adult is difficult, though. Finding fresh hobo is a challenge. And it's like, it just hit the darkest part of my funny bone in just the right way. And it's like, you know, luckily I was at home and no one else was here, because it made me just cackle.
My favorite two sentence story is probably the one on page 5, the muddy boots, which says, "I hate when my husband leaves his muddy boots in the hallway. I don't like to nag, but he was buried in them."
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I totally misread that the first read through. I interpreted it as I might not have interpreted it wrong. I interpreted he came back as a zombie. That was my takeaway from that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he was buried. Maybe he was buried alive. It's up to you to determine.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh,
how you
okay.
Interpret
yeah,
it.
I got what you're. Yeah, I took it as he was a zombie, but
you can
yeah, when you spin it that way.
Again, you know, as the reader, like, these are two-sentence stories. There's not a lot of space to, you know, develop characters and give you a lot of backstory. So however you interpret it, I mean, that's the right way for you. Like, there's no wrong way to interpret this. I will say, though, yeah. The following story, again, two sentences, is based on one of my favorite movies of all time. The Monster Squad, and I was able to, if you watch Throwdown, or if you listen to Throwdown Thursday for this week, because I'm not sure exactly when this episode is airing, but the Throwdown Thursday that drops on October 22nd, we got the chance to interview Andre Gower, who played Sean in the Monster Squad, to promote his new documentary about the Monster Squad and the making of it and all that, called Wolfman's Got Nards, which comes out on the 27th. It's a story called Lock Me Up, and it goes, "Last night I went to the police station screaming that I was a werewolf and needed to be caged, and they shot me 20 times. I'm back again today and they still don't believe me." As we find out in The Monster Squad, only one way to kill a werewolf.
Okay, I was actually talking with Cooper with this one, and I said there's not a bad two-sentence horror story, I said, this one's going over my head. I said, I don't get it unless it's something to do with the silver bullets. And he goes, I didn't think about that either. But now you've got it straight from the, I don't want to say horse's mouth, but...
But in the Monster Squad, the guy goes to the police station, and he's like, "I'm a werewolf, you got to lock me up," and he freaks out, and they shoot him. And
okay.
He comes back and kills the ambulance driver that's driving him to the morgue.
Oh my gosh.
So
okay, that's...
there's a whole thing about, you know, how do you kill a werewolf, and there's a whole yeah.
Yeah,
watch
episode as soon as I do my Frankenstein thing on this, you know, where I cut off the head and, you know, in any inappropriate bits in the middle, it'll be out tomorrow night.
Excellent. So that would be the 22nd, the same day. So
yeah, which actually it is the first in the series of our first annual Epic Airways Podcast Network Scarathon. Like a marathon, but spookier. And we're going to have a keyword hidden in the episode, which I've got to figure out which word.
Yeah,
which
check
word
out,
was my...
Check out next week's Throwdown Thursday for another word. So...
Yeah, we had to add an extra word.
You'll have to be on the lookout for it. So...
Don't mind me, I'm just checking the old Ouija board here.
Yeah, that's a good way to get yourself possessed. Free possession with every exorcism.
Yeah, possession is 9/10 of the law. All right, you can dip into the horror haikus while I try and find the secret word.
Sure,
scream real loud.
I'll pull one out that I like. So, I'll do the one that this is actually based on. So, if you look at the book, it's broken up into several sections, and Jeanette's artwork is just beyond incredible. So, I have an introduction to it. It says these are stories told in the classic style of Japanese poems. There are also some pictures that accompany them, drawn by Jeanette. I hope that you will enjoy these as much as I enjoyed writing them. And of course, a haiku, for those of you who are unfamiliar, is 5 syllables, then 7 syllables, then 5 syllables. So part of the reason why I did this the way I did is because I was trying to challenge myself. I had written some flash fiction that got picked up in an anthology from 2012, called Daily Frights, where they had a different flash fiction story for every single day of the year. And a flash fiction story is 500 words or less. So then I was like, well, can I tell a whole story in a haiku? Can I tell a whole story in just two sentences? So I was really just trying to challenge myself and see what I could do. And, you know, hopefully folks enjoy some of these. So I'm gonna go with one. I'll start with the one that inspired the title of this book. And it's called Gratuity. How much do you tip an exorcist? I need to know by Saturday. And then, of course, we have the artwork that Jeanette did that's amazing. And I'll do a couple other stories real quick because...
Now, there's the thing with me. These, I got to be honest, this is where, I don't want to say the book lost me, but this is lost on me. I'm not familiar with haikus myself, so they did kind of go over my head. And but I liked Gratuity. That was the good one. I liked the names, and then, you know, the art is just,
yeah. And that's what I've been saying.
It's like getting a comic book.
Yeah. Anytime somebody, you know, brings this up, it's like, you know, this is as good as these stories are, you know, and, you know, obviously they're of varying quality, and some people might like them, some people might not. They would be like, this book would not exist without her artwork. Like, there would be no point. Like, no one's just gonna read these haikus and think, oh, these are great, you know. And, like, you could imagine, you know, what some of these things are, but you know, a couple of people have looked at the story Refusal, which is on page 21, and they like that art so much they want to get it tattooed. This one, it goes, it's called, like I said, Refusal. Says, I release my blood. They scream, curse, and pound the door. Won't let them turn me. So apparently it's someone who is tired of fighting monsters. You know, it could be whatever type of monster. It could be vampires, could be zombies, could be werewolves, could be, I don't know, Republicans. You never know. And it's someone who doesn't want to fight anymore, and so they take their own life going out on their own terms. Well, this one kind of ties in with... the Lock Me Up story. And this, the art, Jeanette was nice enough to illustrate both myself and my wife Ash's Von Nightmare into the stories. And this one is called Daylight. Silver bullets, check. Maps to monsters' homes, check. Revenge, soon to come.
Very nice.
So yeah, like,
okay, when I hear them read out loud, they translate a little bit better. But like I said, haikus weren't really my... you know what, it's like, not to I guess give away your thunder, but yeah, it's like, you know, the art really ties together the stories, and it's like, I think each enhances the other. I think that the stories are great by themselves. I think that the art is beautiful by itself, but woven together in this dark tapestry, just it sends chills through you in the best way possible.
Well, I appreciate that. I was trying with most of these stories, I was trying to, you know, give a mix of horror and, you know, tension and, you know, a little bit of comedy here and there.
And it is. It does have that. I get exactly where you're going with that. It's not like, oh, this book is terrifying. It's like, you know what? It's like, if you're a horror fan, if you like punny, like, there's something for everyone in here, but it's like, you know, if you're picking this up thinking that it's going to be, you know, like a Stephen King super slog of, it's digestible. It's got, you know, like I said, it's got the haikus, the two sentence horror stories, the short stories, a couple of lists at the end. So, you know what, it's like, it's a good coffee table book, and, you know, no disrespect, like, it's a great book for while you're in the can.
Yeah, that's, you know, part of what the marketing was for that, telling people. It's like, no, I mean, because a lot of people, like, man, you know, I don't have the time or the patience to read a book. It's like, yeah, but none of these stories are longer than 10 pages. A lot of this you could just sit down and just flip through. Like, you don't have to read it in any type of order because it's not a straight narrative. There are some stories that are connected. There are some things that are part of a larger universe.
I like that.
Yeah, like, there are some stories.
I do like the, what's it, the Trick or Treat where the all the stories are woven together by the end, and then you realize they totally Tarantino'd you.
Yeah, it's an anthology film where all the stories are tangentially tied together because they all take place in the same town and have very similar players that are involved in each one. But like with this, there are a couple of stories that are connected, and I have, I call it my Riftverse because it takes place in this a post-apocalyptic Lovecraftian world where this interdimensional rift opens up and, humans are fundamentally changed in a myriad of ways, and also there are monsters. So you see three of those
stories.
Okay,
yeah.
Three of the stories in here. And some of the stories were inspired by friends of mine. Or rather, I named characters after my friends in order to immortalize them in a book because they were inspirational. But one of the stories is definitely part of a greater narrative that, when it's finally all revealed, will absolutely blow your fucking mind. Because it's... think of it as a long con, and I will say no more about that. And I'm not even going to tell you which story it is, but one of the stories is a long con. And when you, like I said, when you see it, some of these things, like the story that I'm going to read, The Girl in the Train, is connected to...
Oh, good. That's the one I wanted to hear.
Is connected to a story that is in an anthology that just dropped, which is also being submitted for a Stoker Award, called More Lore from the Mythos 2, which is all about Lovecraftian horror. And this takes place in my Riftverse. The story is called Scavengers, and my good buddy Steve Van Samson is also in this anthology, as well as the very incredibly talented Trisha Wooldridge. Both of those folks I have known for many, many years, and they are fantastic writers. But I also have a Lovecraftian body horror story, which also takes place in the same universe, that came out last year in More Lore from the Mythos, Volume 1. And you'll see another one in Volume 3, hopefully releasing next year. But, Andy, do you have any other questions, comments, concerns regarding the book?
Well, I tell you what, the scary good price that you can pick this thing up for, it's like, I know you can get it through Amazon. It's like, do you see a good return on your investment on this? Like... or should we be tipping the
exorcist
in this case?
If you don't tip an exorcist, you will get repossessed if you don't pay him off. That's the way it works. But, the book is $10, which I think is a very fair price considering the amount of content that's in there. It's about 150 pages. But like I said, there's a lot of different stuff in there. The one story I kind of give people a trigger warning about is called Rise of the Vanquished. It's very different from the other stories that are in this collection. That's very, it's much darker than the rest of them. But I think it tells a valuable lesson. I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil it, because I've had several people approach me and say, like, this was my favorite story. I had one person say, like, this is exactly what I'm trying to teach my child. I don't want to give it away, but I do let people know that, hey, this one's a little darker than the other ones. Like, you can handle blood and guts and gore. Like, that's not a big deal. But this Rise of the Vanquished is, for some people, might be a little bit difficult to swallow. Because I think that one might be a little bit more relatable than others. So I think that's a good way to describe it.
Gotcha.
Without giving anything away. And now, Andy, I don't know if you've read that one yet.
No, I specifically haven't read the short stories yet because I wasn't sure which one you were going to read. And I wanted to give, like, an honest, like,
reaction.
When you read it, I wanted the people to hear my reactions to this one. And I was really hoping for Girl on the Train. Just the title alone grabbed me. Some of my favorite creepypastas are like some of the weird train creepypastas. There's just something creepy and ominous about trains overall. It's like a bygone means of transportation. And as you say the riff verse, and I look at this, I'm noticing it's like kind of pinup meets, oh gosh, I can't think of the movie now. It was my staff picks last week. Is it Creepshow?
It might be. Yeah, Creepshow is a fairly accurate description of this. I mean, I'm not Stephen King or George Romero. Like, don't get that twisted. But as far as, you know, the genre, like I said, some of these. So the names of the stories. I'll just read the names of the stories for folks. The first one is called The Girl on the Train, and that's 6 pages. The Lost Ball, which is 8. Rise of the Vanquished, also 8. The Librarian versus the Controller, also 8. Roboctopus, also 8. Too Ugly for Heaven, which is 12. Croctopus, which is the sequel to Roboctopus, is only 4. Tiny White Will Punch Your Fucking Lights Out, that's 12. The Twisted Tragic Tale of Michael Raven Shadow, also 12. My favorite of the stories, Winter's Discontent, which is 20, or give or take.
Nightbreed,
okay.
Nightbreed is what I was thinking. It was right there. I don't know why I said Creepshow. Probably because I'm like looking at my horror movie collection
over
here.
Well, Creepshow
just, like,
is more of an anthology, kind of the way this is. But yeah, I could see Nightbreed as well. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, with the art was kind of like Pinup meets Nightbreed. But yeah,
yeah.
I'm getting now that I said the Creepshow vibes, it's like, yeah, it's like you're getting a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like I said, it's just
some of the things are,
you know,
tangentially tied together, like the Tiny White story, the Too Ugly for Heaven story, the Roboctopus, Croctopus, and Michael Raven Shadow stories. Those are all tied together, and those are part of the Riftverse. So
now I'm going to read through this. Now I'm going to read through this again, like cover to cover. And I'm going to be looking for these connections now. And I think I'm going to get a completely different experience out of the haikus and
well,
everything.
The,
I think this is going to be like a really good movie that you watch and you pick up something new every time.
Yeah, I hope so. So if you want, I will jump into this story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right. I've got it marked, so I'm going to follow along here.
All right. So this is The Girl on the Train. And by the way, the story headers, that is something that Jeanette did on her own. I didn't know she was doing those, and I think they came out just looking amazing. So we're going to start with The Girl on the Train. Darren waited restlessly for the next Riverside-bound train to arrive at North Station. The Bruins had just crushed the Canadiens 6-1, and he was feeling pretty good, his well-being aided further by the beer and nachos he had partaken of during the course of the game. He watched the people milling around, wearing black and gold jerseys, hats, and shirts, chatting with each other, high-fiving strangers and heckling anyone in red and blue, the colors of the enemy. Out of the corner of his eye, he noticed a tall, long-haired blonde. Her hair reached halfway down her back, and she wore a black T-shirt. He assumed it was a Bruins shirt. And a short, black skirt. He noticed and appreciated her legs, noting how they looked, and attributed it partly to the red heels she wore, but more likely adherence to strict diet and working out. He was suddenly and intensely interested in finding out what she looked like. She started to turn her head towards him, but someone passed between them, blocking his view. In the moment it took for the person to pass, she had turned away again. Darren swore to himself and hoped that she would be getting on the same train as he was. He tried walking over to get a better look at her, but realized how creepy he was being. He was just staring, some might say leering, at this blonde girl. He didn't think anyone would understand that he just wanted to know what she looked like. Trying to hide his interest, he just stared ahead, using the excuse of peering down the tunnel whenever he heard a train, to both check to make sure the girl was still there, and also to see if it was his train that was approaching. 15 minutes later, 3 more trains had come by, 2 of them bound for Boston College, and the crowd had thinned out significantly. Still, there were enough people on the platform that he could not get a clear look at the blonde girl that was, for some reason, deeply intriguing him. He cursed himself for being so damn shy and wished he could just go over and talk to her. Of course, he was worried that she was going to be ugly. Darren wasn't usually that shallow, but he felt it would be a great disappointment to spend all this time trying to find out what she looked like, only to find out that she was hideous. To him, it would be like finding a treasure chest full of shredded newspaper. He was also worried that she would think he was creepy. Not that he wasn't, but he wasn't creepy in a perverted way. He was just shy and introverted. That was why he went to Bruins games, because he could yell and celebrate the team's success with total strangers. It was his way of socializing. See, no matter how loudly you yell or who you're yelling at, there is someone who will accept you at a Bruins game. They're on your side. They're not judging you. That was the part that Darren liked most, the temporary friendship that the game provided. He stole another glance at the girl who was, of course, looking in the same direction he was, down the tunnel at the approaching train. Darren looked at the front window, just above the driver, where the train's destination Riverside was displayed in bright green letters. Darren shuffled along with all the other remaining passengers who were wedging themselves onto the three cars, some hoping desperately to find a seat, others not caring. In all the confusion, Darren lost sight of the blonde girl and his heart sank. He was disappointed, assuming that she had either not boarded this train or if she had, she was in another car. In a span of about half an hour, Darren's need to see this girl's face had grown from passing curiosity to a burning desire, like a junkie needing his fix. As hard as he tried to discover what she looked like, something always prevented him from seeing her face. It was maddeningly frustrating. He needed to see her face. His need to see her face was now more akin to a physical imperative, like thirst or hunger. He resigned himself to the fact that he would never know what this girl looked like and stared out the windows at the darkened landscape. It was almost midnight now, and the train rolled along through the darkened streets of Boston and the surrounding suburbs, carrying the passengers who were elated at the Bruins' victory, those who lamented the loss of the Canadians, and those who had no rooting interest whatsoever and simply wanted to go home. Standing in the back of the crowded train car, Darren stared out the window on the right side of the train where he was leaning without really looking at anything. The train was packed with people talking, but he didn't hear anything, didn't really see anything either. The sleeping towns and cities passed unnoticed. He sighed and turned to look out the window on the left side and froze. There she was. She was by the left exit door of the train, surrounded by people, but somehow alone. As was the case before, her perfect calves, helped along by the red heels, and her long blonde hair were all he saw as she was again facing away from him. He tried in vain to see her face reflected on the window, but all he could see was her hair. It was like each time he looked into the window to steal a glimpse of her face, as if she sensed him doing so, and turned to prevent him from seeing her. He quickly dismissed that thought. It was ridiculous. How could she know? It just had to be a coincidence, just like on the platform. All he had to do was wait until people started getting off the train. He'd always get his look once she got off the train or when other people exited and made it easier to see her. The train progressed along its predetermined course, dropping passengers at the stops along the way. Longwood lightened the load by about 15 passengers. At Newton Highland, 10 more departed, and by this time the crowd was significantly thinned, but Darren still couldn't see her face. The Brookline stop passed and the crowd dwindled to only a handful of people. Darren saw that the girl was still there, and a thrill went through him. Maybe she's getting off at Riverside, too. The train conductor let everyone know that the final stop was coming up and to make sure they had all of their personal belongings. The train pulled into Riverside, slowed, stopped. The doors opened, and Darren bounded out, determined to get a look at the blonde girl who had been vexing him for nearly 2 hours. Ran around the train to find her ahead of the small crowd that had remained on the train for this particular stop. How did she move so quickly? He walked as briskly as he could without looking weird. At worst, he hoped he would look like someone trying to hurry to a bathroom. There was a car parked way off from the other cars, next to his. Another thrill ran through him. She's parked right next to me. He quickened his pace and passed the people who were not worried about what the blonde girl looked like. Darren didn't mind. He wanted to be the only one who knew. He wanted it to be a secret he kept away from all the others. Knowledge only he had attained. And I'll take it to my grave, he thought wildly and had to suppress a giddy laugh. He was almost caught up with the girl, and there was no one else around. Suddenly she stopped so short that Darren nearly walked into her in his excitement. Why are you following so closely to me? She asked. Her voice was almost musical. I was all he could manage to say. He smelled her. It was like a lovely floral scent that filled his head and made him feel like he was floating. Are you so desperate to see my face? Yes, he whispered. He'd never wanted anything more in his life, although he wasn't sure why he was being so straightforward about it. That wasn't like him at all. As you wish, he said, with a smile in her voice. She turned to face Darren. No, he said. The floral scent that had so intoxicated him was replaced with the scent of rotting flesh. The music in her voice was gone. Now her words were like poison for his soul. She smiled at him with her demon's face, her mouth stretched impossibly wide, showing hundreds of teeth like the mouth of a shark. Saliva dribbled down her lips, and she snapped her teeth together menacingly, and Darren was sprayed with foamy spit. He didn't notice because he had lost all control of his bladder and bowels as the thing grabbed and lifted him off his feet with gnarled hands that ended in long, hooked claws. He felt the claws tear into his chest and back, felt the blood flow from the wounds. The creature inhaled so forcefully that Darren's hair was tousled as it tasted Darren's fear and reveled in its intoxicating aroma. Darren, however, was so overcome with the scent of desiccated meat, he vomited onto the creature. It looked at Darren with something that he registered as amusement, as the last of his sanity flowed from him. That was rude of you, the demon said. That was the last thing Darren ever heard. The creature turned its head at an impossible angle, its mouth completely vertical, and unhinged its jaws and snapped its head forward like a snake. Darren's survival instinct kicked in, and he finally tried to fight, but the creature snapped its mouth shut on the side of Darren's face. He screamed as its serrated teeth slowly made their way through the soft flesh of his cheeks. He cried out as the teeth sunk into the bone of his skull. He made no sound, however, when those teeth finally succeeded in cracking his skull and penetrated the soft, gray mass of his brain. The creature pulled its teeth away and held Darren's split skull in his hands, delicately licking the brains from the shattered skull with its long tongue, like a child licking the frosting from a cupcake. The creature was covered in blood and vomit and other bodily fluids as it looked upon its kill. It gently placed Darren on the ground and admired its carnage. Then it reached down and plucked out his eyes, still dangling the optic nerves, and popped them into its mouth like grapes, relishing the sweet juices that filled its mouth and ran down its throat. It smiled a terrifying smile and went to its work. Darren's body was crammed unceremoniously into the trunk of the girl's car. A black light rimmed with an angry red tinge surrounded the creature, and its appearance changed once again. The creature did what it always did, take on the form of its latest kill. Now it was time to tempt another, and the cycle would continue.
Man, that last page and a half, it sent a chill. It started with goosebumps on the arms, and I mean, it crawled the whole way up my freaking spine. Like, at first it started off as, like, nervous giggling. I see where this is going, and then it's like, I like the shark mouth teeth. If you guys don't know, Patsy is, like, the biggest shark fan expert.
I'm a shark enthusiast.
The man is cocoa nuts for him. Yeah. But it's not creepy. It's not like, you know, not like you're thinking. Like, it is in the best way possible. But that was great. That alone is worth the price of admission.
Well, I'm glad that you liked it. Ash said that she liked the way this worked up from a slow burn to all of a sudden, like you said, that last page and a half where it really just ramped up and started flying forward.
And it wasn't just like, oh, she's a zombie, or oh, she's a vampire, or oh, she's some, like, run-of-the-mill demon chick. It's like, no, it was like gory, grotesque detail, and it's like you could just see this morphosis happening. And then I guess I'm sick, and you know, when you were talking about biting into the skull, all I could get is the image of my head is like just tearing into a Tootsie Pop. You know, just that satisfaction of, to hell with licking, I am going to find out, you know, a one, a two,
yes,
a gone.
Yeah. Three.
Oh my gosh, that was great. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's definitely, wow, now I want to read the other ones now. Like, I specifically didn't read these because I wanted, like I said, the full experience, and it's like that. Whew. Let me calm down here a second.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope the folks listening enjoyed it.
That would make the sickest comic ever.
Well, it's funny because Jeanette said that, you know, the next time I do something, because Jeanette and I will be teaming up again for How Much Do You Tip an Exorcist 2, The Search for More Money.
Yeah.
She wants to illustrate some of my short stories as well.
Yeah, I would love to see that is like the what was the Bong Chong Dong ghost webcomic.
I'm unfamiliar.
It was like a big hit back when PewDiePie was still like a big thing. It's like you watched it and then it like the comic moved on its own, but it was like a really creepy comic, and it's like I thought that's where it was going a little bit. I thought it was gonna go the way of the slit mouth woman, like, do you wanna see my face, lover? And it's like, you know, am I still beautiful now? And it just totally I thought it was gonna go right and it totally went left. And it's like I'm so much happier that it went beyond my expectations. It went just totally the other way, and it's like oh my gosh. Wow. Well,
Well, I mean,
thank you very much for reading that.
oh yeah, I'm glad that you liked it.
I've been asking people to submit short stories and stuff that they want to have read on the air, but it's like I can't read a script. All my stuff is unscripted because if I script it, I'm gonna bugger it, I'm gonna fumble it, and it's just gonna. I think you'll get a much better and a much more genuine, off the cuff. That's just my style. I know some people like, you know, they're like, I have to have 1, 2, 3 ABC. You know, I got to know what I'm getting into. And it's like I said, you know, you just get such a better reaction off the cuff. But now we do have a couple of personal questions here.
Oh, please.
We're gonna go ahead and grab your favorite horror movie.
It's a tie. And actually, we'll be talking about these with another gentleman for the 13 Days of Halloween, which you'll be able to check out when I share them in the Throwdown Thursday group. And that would be a tie. It's 1 and 1A, and it bounces back and forth between the two of them. Jaws and the Thing, the 1982 version of the Thing, not the
I was
2011.
gonna say I was gonna say right after I asked, I was like, Jaws, he's gonna say Jaws, and it's like now with this book, I totally see why you say the thing.
Yeah, I love the tension.
Cronenbergian body horror.
Yeah, there was a thing the other day where it was like, you know, something going around on Facebook, like describe your favorite movie, like, you know, poorly, or like to make it sound
Oh,
boring. And it
yeah.
was like, I think for the Thing, it was a group of guys in Antarctica play Guess Who.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Have you seen the Jell-O shots in the Petri
Yes,
dish?
the Jello shots on the Petri dish. There's also
That those are pretty good.
the Hostess Thingdins.
Because you're our first guest, we're gonna play my favorite game. I don't remember if you remember the video board game Nightmare.
No, but I remember watching the what was it, the Gate, I think it was, that like they did a parody of it, but it was real, kind of like a horror Jumanji.
Oh, they had it on Board James. They watched it. He was doing like all that stuff there. But you know, it was one of those like watch along things, and there was the guy, and it was like, man, it's like the gatekeepers are real dick. He would like, you know, answer me, you maggot. But at the beginning of the game, you had to write down your greatest fear on a nightmare card, and it, you know, it came up at the end of the game. If you picked a nightmare card and it wasn't your greatest fear, you were safe. But if it was your greatest fear, then you're banished. Yeah, what would you say your greatest fear is?
My greatest fear is probably Alzheimer's, you know, something where I lose my ability to know who I am. I lose my mind in some way. That to me would be my greatest fear, like not being able to recognize my family. I think that's what it is.
That's deep. And I've told her, I said, we're going to get serious here for a second, but I told her, I said, if there's ever a point that I don't recognize you, I said, will you do me that kindness? And she knew exactly what I was talking about. Because at that point, if you can't remember what matters the most, what's the point in going on?
Right.
So.
And I know people have family members and relatives that, that are afflicted with this, and they feel very differently about it. So I'm not minimizing anybody's experiences. And
Most definitely not.
Like, oh, what's the point of life? Like, no, like, that's my biggest fear because, if I can't remember who people are, like, that's... Like
I was just saying that's just me being selfish and the way I feel I want to live like that, but that's not my decision to make for someone else.
Right. Yeah. That's your personal feeling. So what else you got?
But I think that is about all I had on my notes. I do take notes. These particular notes just happen to be, bound in flesh and inked in blood, but we've covered where they can get it. We've given them a taste of what's in store in the book. Oh, there's the list in the back. I'll just pick my favorite one off the list.
Well, there's
we're not
two
gonna
lists.
Read you the...
There's the list of awful superpowers on the list of movies I think the Sci-Fi Channel should totally make. The Asylum Sci-Fi team up and make these movies.
Yeah. Number 10, the ability to know exactly how much toilet paper to use every time.
Yep.
I don't think that should be on there. That's not useless. I always feel like I'm using way too much. Like,
well, I mean, now, especially with, the whole pandemic that happened where, toilet paper was more valuable than, gold, that would be a useful superpower.
Yeah. Some guy actually did the math of shits per sheet to go through the supply of, what people were buying, and he goes, you would literally have to be, shitting your brains out or, just using an ungodly toilet clogging amount.
Or you could, if you want to conserve it, just use both sides.
Where was my, I got to find it again. My favorite, where'd it go?
Which one are you talking about, the superpower or the...
Number 18. On the movies sci-fi should totally make.
Oh, giants?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I like that
one. Oh, my God. They're all good. I also like Chimpanzee.
Yeah,
that,
number
that
19.
That was good.
I'm.
What was the one on Big Bang Theory? Monkey See, Monkey Kill.
I like that.
But
there's some good stuff in here. I enjoy it. I
that
do
was
think
great.
The best.
Yeah, I think once.
My favorite name is Crocodoodle Doom, which is a crocodile
rooster
hybrid creature is designed to be a rapidly reproducing, quickly renewable food source. Problems arise when the creatures overpower their handlers and begin breeding and overtaking suburban neighborhoods. The power of short distance flight, coupled with an incredibly tough hide, make them difficult to kill.
Nice. That's a good one too. Well, I think once the book's been out for a little bit while. Once the book's been out for a little while, and I plug this on a group that's been just literally chomping at the bit. They've been waiting for Epic Tales of Darkness to drop. Shout out to I'll just have to edit this part. The Drop Dead Family Asylum. They are a pretty big all things horror group, so I'm going to drop this in there.
Very cool.
With their blessing. And I could be wrong, but I think they're like 11K strong. So hopefully that translates out to listens for me and book sales for you and Mother to Vigo.
Yeah, I mean, whatever works. That's, I hope folks check this out, and I hope they enjoy it. I know that it's not for everybody, but I think some folks will really really dig it. Like, there is there's some. I don't expect it to be universally popular. I don't even expect the stuff inside the book to be universally popular, even with, you know, hardcore horror fans or, you know, folks who like horror comedies. Like, if I were to pitch this as, you know, if you like X, then you'll like this. If you like stuff like Tucker and Dale versus Evil or Shaun of the Dead or Deathgasm, Turbo Kid, like, that's the type of stuff that you'll enjoy this. This book, I think.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I like that. You know, the book doesn't take itself too seriously. You know, it's thin enough that I don't mind carrying it around. But it did. I used to have The Alphabet of Manliness as my bathroom book, and pun intended, this one dethroned it.
Very nice. Well, I'm glad. Like I said, I hope you enjoy it.
So that's what I liked about it. Well, I think we've terrified the audience enough for one night. I know I am going to just dig into this thing.
Yeah, I'm interested
with both hands and a tentacle.
Interested to hear what you think.
But Patrick, thank you. Thank you so much for being our very first guest. I know that I owe my podcasting to you and Cooper for giving me the confidence to strike out on my own. And I really wanted to get you on here both to promote your book and as a way to say thank you for having me on as your guest.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad you decided to take the plunge. You know, like I told you when you first started, and it's the same advice I give to everybody about everything. It's advice that I was given myself. Whether it's podcasting or whether you want to write a book or whether you want to, you know, break into, you know, stand-up comedy, there's a million people that do this. You know, every one of these things, there's a million people that do what we do, but nobody else has your voice. Nobody else has your mind. No one else is going to be able to do what you do the way you do it. So give it a shot, you know. Worst thing
that
happens.
Folks, I know this isn't the D&D podcast, but there's some bardic inspiration to get you set on the right path. Well, I am gonna jump off here and see about something to eat. I see, you know what? I'm not sure if this is a cookbook, but I did see a very good recipe for hobo stew. So
yeah,
good luck on your next book. I cannot wait to get eyeballs on that. And as for the Epic Airways Podcast Network Scarathon word, the word you're listening for, oddly enough, is words. That's right, words. And you will need to let me know. You can find me at Andy Doyle at Facebook.com. Yeah, Facebook.com. What is at Facebook, or you can find me on the Epic Tales of Darkness, as well as Amalgamania, and just let me know what podcast you heard the keyword words on. There'll be, I do believe it is 7 other words that you'll put together to create a phrase. Now, here's the part where we got a little cheeky, because some of you horror fans might be able to guess the phrase. You also have to let us know which podcast you heard which word on.
So keep track.
Indeed, keep track. All right, Patrick, good luck. Thank you very much for coming on once again.
Thank you for
having
me.
And stay spooky.
That's the plan.
It's time for the first annual Epic Airways Podcast Network Scarathon. 8 great podcasts, 9 amazing episodes, 1 epic prize to win. Listen for the keywords in each episode, then put all words together to form a single sentence. From October 22nd till Fright Night itself, October 31st, listen to these great shows. Amalga Cast. Amalga Files. Epic Tales Podcast. Epic Tales of Darkness. Epic Tales. From the Sewers. Retro Red Octopus. Those Not So Super Dudes. And Throwdown Thursday. Be sure to check out the post in Amalgamania for official rules, details, and prize. Good luck, and stay creepy.